Hello there! This week we have the first episode of a new series called In the PI Seat. So you're about to hear some new voices, including your fabulous host, Camilla. She'll be talking to young PIs about their transition from postdoc to head of a group and the new challenges that brings.
Hello there, and welcome to In the PI Seat, a podcast where we chat with young researchers that have recently started their own groups. We'll be discussing the challenges of this new role and how they are different from what they've been trained for. I am your host, Camila Valenzuela, a postdoctoral researcher, and today I have Nicolas Raskovan, a G5 group leader at Institut Pasteur. So, welcome, Nico.
Hello, Camila. Thanks for the invitation.
I'm really happy to have you here, and actually, I first have to say that your lab has the coolest logo I've ever seen. So if any of the listeners wants to see it, I will link the Twitter in the show notes. And also, it's really funny because your research actually made me question why did I step away from genomics when I had the chance to like go that way, and now I'm something completely different. But it's like, I should have stayed there, maybe.
Well, there are so many cool things to do that we cannot possibly do everything that is nice and cool.
Exactly, that's a good way to put it. Okay, so I would actually like to start by asking you exactly what it means to be a G5 group leader in terms of funding, staff, the timing that you have, etc.
Right. So G5 positions are something very specific of Institut Pasteur. I mean, different institutes in different parts of the world have something similar with different flavors. But the G5 particular is something that is in the flavor of Institut Pasteur. And so what it means is that this is a position as a PI in which they give you a starting package. So a starting package means some resources to set up a team, a new team. And you essentially have 5 years to demonstrate that you were able to set up, to mount a team, and to lead a team by your own, at which stage you are evaluated to become eventually a formal unit of research. So this is essentially in a very general perspective. I can give you more details if you want.
No, it's perfect. It's just so the listeners have an idea of the different type of starting positions that you can find around the world. So it's perfect. Okay, so now your career path, from what you sent me, it's actually quite interesting because you did your undergrad in Argentina, but then you moved to the US as an invited research before starting your PhD. When you went to the US, you went to the NIH at Bethesda. And how was that experience for you going from undergrad to work in a big lab, I assume?
Coming from Argentina was super exciting in many levels. For me, I was 24. That was my chance to get to know how was living in another country, and also how was like a big lab like this, when it was a very high profile lab, all full of postdocs from all over the world. So it was a very international environment, great science being done, and I was kind of trying to cope with all this information and all these things. And so it, even if it was just for 1 year, it really was the groundings of my scientific career in a way, because I really, there I got a very big boost on everything that it takes to be a scientist.
That's really fascinating. Do you think that experience helped you not only in like, as you said, setting the groundwork for your career, but also in terms of like more challenging experiences when you started your PhD? Because for your PhD, you went back to Argentina. Do you think that any way that helped you like to maybe focus it more easily?
No doubt about it. No doubt. I mean, I believe that I am, and even now looking backward, but I also felt that way at the time. Well, first, because I had first worked 2 years in Argentina before going to the US in a very good lab that was also very renowned in Argentina. Then that year in the US, so after 3 years working in labs, I was really very mature towards the PhD. I was very independent. So the work I did in the US, it was very, very independent. I was not really followed like a kind of a technician. I was kind of, well, this is more or less the question that you need to answer. You plan your experiment, you buy your stuff, you do your experiment, you interpret the results. So it was kind of a PhD in a nutshell, if you want. And without the pressure of publishing or whatever. So if there was something great, if not, no problem. So when I came to Argentina, the project that we wanted to develop was a project that was kind of very new in many senses. It was really at the beginning of the high-throughput sequencing era, so there was not really previous experience on that. So it really required a lot of setup of new things and learning new stuff from scratch, and also having a very clear idea of how to organize the scientific world. So definitely, for such a challenging project, having all these experiences before gave me a lot of independence, and I could really drive my research with a lot of autonomy. Actually, to be honest, I mean, the PhD itself, and the papers that I published during the PhD, it was pretty much me writing them and doing all the work, because my supervisor at some point got a different position, so he was not really present, which was bad in a sense, but very good in the other. On the long term, it was actually good, because I really gained a lot of independence during that time.
Yeah, but probably if you didn't have those experiences before, then probably you would have been in a more difficult situation.
A disaster.
Yeah, because I mean, for a less experienced person, then probably like being almost without a supervisor for a while during the PhD can be quite challenging. So,
well, it actually happened.
Yeah.
I mean, some people that went there doing the PhD at the time had much harder time than me.
Yeah, I imagine. And because at that point is where you started focusing on metagenomics. So what brought you to that topic?
Actually, my PhD supervisor, when I was still studying biology, he talked about these new technologies that were coming. I mean, we're talking back in 2007, something like that. I mean, high throughput sequencing only by 454 or solid or these technologies, all technologies were starting to pop up. And he was explaining how revolutionary these technologies were going to be. And actually, I mean, were even much more revolutionary than we ever thought. But at the time, we were thinking, well, this looks like very promising. And he was focusing particularly on the use of this technology for metagenomics. Among the myriad of things you can do with these technologies, about metagenomics. And he was actually explain a very simple concept, that is that so far we only knew a very tiny fraction of the microbial diversity, because we didn't have any way to culture and to study them, and that with this technology we were going to be able to access to that big vast majority of things that we didn't know anything about. So it was really like the term that he was using was opening the black box. And actually that concept stick in my head, and actually one of the title of my PhD dissertation 5 or 7 years after was opening the black box of microbial diversity, something like that, because that is, I think, the key thing is opening the black box.
Amazing.
And how can something be more exciting than opening a black box for a scientist? I mean, going to where nobody knows what's going to be found, you know. It's like,
Yeah, no, that's amazing. And then you move to France, basically, like another big trip. But this time, I think it was for a bit of different reasons, let's say.
Yeah, exactly.
I wanted to ask, actually, if when you came to France, was it difficult to find a postdoc? Because I don't think you came with something already tied, right?
Mm-hmm. It was, actually. It was. Until that point of the PhD, the end of my PhD, everything was kind of relatively easy in a way, and always in a very
like aligned,
aligned way. I mean, not really aligned in terms of the topics that I was doing, but I mean, I got good grades in the university, so I got to get into a very good research lab in Argentina. Then before finishing the studies, I already had gotten this position in the US, so it was one change after the other. This lab in the US could have opened me doors everywhere, because it's a very famous lab. But then I chosen to come back to Argentina because of this exciting project. So that was very easy, because I really knew that I was going to do the PhD in Argentina before even going to the US. So everything was solved. So I was kind of following the thing. All the things were exciting, but all of them were changed one after the other. But then it was the time to decide what to do. So and as you said, I mean, when I was in the US, I met who is now my wife and the mother of my daughters, but at the time it was just a girl that I met in the US, and she is eventually, she was doing the postdoc, she's a little bit older than me, and she got the position, a PI position in France. So I said, well, okay, if we want to stay together, I need to just follow you. So I followed her to France, to the south of France, to Montpellier. And during the last year of my PhD, I started to apply for and looking for postdoc positions in France, and it was super hard. I mean, I was trying to contact, first of all, because I didn't know the network. I didn't know the people, I didn't know the labs, I didn't know any background about who were good, who were bad, who were the labs that were well-funded. So I started to kind of contact people random, more or less in the thematic. There were not many people doing metagenomics neither, so nothing really to continue what I was doing. So I was kind of lost, and I was almost a year that I was sending emails at either very often no response at all, and some other times just saying, no, I don't have any funding or I cannot. Now I understand better the French system. I sort of understand that it's not that easy as in other places. So then I moved to France without any position, hoping to find something. And then fortunately, the stars aligned, and 15 days after looking for a place for 1 year, I moved to France, and 2 weeks after, suddenly there is this opportunity of doing a postdoc in viral metagenomics in Marseille. So it was not Montpellier, it was 2 hours drive, or 2 hours by train, but that was the only, the best I could find. And then that was good. It was a year up from a young researcher, doing stuff that were interesting, so I just went there. But coming back to the thing, so it was not easy. It took me a lot of frustration of emails sent and nobody replying. And then when I got the position, it's not that I really got the opportunity to choose the best possible lab or to really rank them and go and interview. It was kind of what I could find, essentially.
Yeah. Sometimes it's like that. But in a way, I think it was part of the path that took you to where you are now. So then you also mentioned that at the end of your postdoc, you got some interesting results, but like the break was finishing, and if you wanted to explore this avenue, then you had to really take a huge risk in terms of your career. So can you tell us what happened during that year?
Yes. So here is really where everything just shifted in a way, and it was really the inflection point of all this. So I did a postdoc that was relatively okay, not really outstanding, not really bad. I published like 4 papers as first author, but not in super big journals. Normal, something that would have been enough just to get another postdoc or to try to get some positions, but not enough to get like super competitive positions. That was the situation. And I really wanted to do something, and I really had an idea of something I wanted to do, but I needed just to put all the elements together into the soup for that to work, okay? So by the end of the postdoc, in the middle of the postdoc, that was 3 years long, so 1 year and a half, I started to think about which kind of project I could develop as a PI. And then I started to think, what do I need to set to do this? So I need some results to as a proof of concept that this can be done. I need to have some preliminary results as well, etc. So then I came up with an idea of something that could be done just as a proof of concept of what I wanted to do. In that case, what I wanted to do essentially, very simple, is try to get genomes of human-associated microbes from ancient DNA data, so from archaeological remains or data obtained from ancient human remains. So then I came up with this idea of a small project just to explore public data in search of these microbes. And then I didn't know how to do it. So what I did was to contact someone that had recently published a paper in Cell, doing the kind of things that I needed to learn how to do, and I contacted him and said, hey, can you teach me how you do this? And I was lucky enough that he said, yes, sure, come for a week to my lab and I show you how I do it. So I went for a week to Copenhagen. And then I already had more or less an idea of what I wanted to do. So I did a run analysis. He gave me access to a big server just to run the analysis quite fast and well. And then I was hoping just to get some results that were more or less expected. So just trying to find oral microbes in ancient teeth, which is something that you can expect in a way. And then I got this super interesting result of finding a pathogen in a place and in a sample that was not reported and nobody knew about it. And it was completely unexpected to find this pathogen in this time in that place. So then I knew I had something super exciting. But that was by the end of my postdoc. So then I had to make a decision. What do I do with this? So do I search for another postdoc in order to keep boosting my CV? But that would mean that, I mean, this project will be just a side project that who knows when I'm going to finish it? Or should I dedicate time to finish up, to wrap up this story and to make something around this? So then the risk I had to take was to say, okay, I'm not going to search for another postdoc. I want to finish this up because I think this is big enough that can give me what I need to get the project. So the proof of concept, probably a good paper. So everything, all the elements that I still needed to get the position. Well, so essentially that bet meant to be 2 years in unemployed, working at home. At the time, I also got a daughter. So I was bouncing the daughter with 1 foot and writing and banking analysis in my computer in the other. And that whole research project was done essentially at home for over a year and a half, more or less. And I was lucky enough that the paper was finally published in Cell, which opened finally the door to both get the funding and the position. But it was a big bet, you know?
Yeah. No, it's really... And it's something that you can also do in France, for example. It's not something that you can do like everywhere in the world, you know? I don't know, in Argentina, but in Chile, for example, if you don't have a position, then you're basically...
You don't have a salary.
So that's...
Yeah, no, absolutely. I mean, this, I sort of took advantage of this opportunity that is only here in very few places in the world that you can still keep having at least a proportion of your salary. And then that gives time to, I mean, and this is something that if you use that opportunity well enough, you can really do things that are very productive during that time. Some people chose to do it, or some people chose to just, I mean, spend the time and relaxing. But I mean, you can really take advantage.
Yeah, for sure. It's pretty nice. And then, so you got your pastor position, but you also applied for many other things. Do you have like a rough estimate of how many positions did you apply to?
Yes. Yeah, I can tell you precisely. And so it was a very frustrating process, that I have to say, because one thing is what we just mentioned about the risk, taking the risk of, I mean, just working by your own for a while. But also the fact that during that time that I was doing that, I was already applying for positions. And I was getting feedback that I still needed some elements that were not still there. I started applying for positions, I think, in 2017. And I was applying for CNRS, for INSERM positions, for ERD as well, INRA, and also Maître de Conf. So I was really applying to any sort of position because my girlfriend was already here in France with the PI position in the CNRS. So I knew I already had a daughter, so I knew that I had to stay in France. So I needed the position. So I started to apply to everything. Of course, I wanted to develop my project and to be a PI, but at some point you need the job, you need the position, you know? So I applied in the CNRS in the year 2017, 2018, 2019. 3 years in a row, and I applied in different commissions. So all together, there were 7 oral presentations. So I was, I mean, more applications than that, but I was called to go to the oral interviews 7 times. And even after publishing the Cell paper, I did 2 interviews in the CNRS and 1 interview in the ERD, and I was not even shortlisted in any of those. So then I thought, okay, this is the end of my career. Because if after publishing a paper in such a journal and having a strong project that, well, what I believed was a strong project, people were still not believing in my application, that meant that I did something wrong, and it's probably too late just to correct the thing, because it has been already 2 years in chômage, and I think at that point I say, well, I'm really complicated. So I start thinking about doing something else. And then it was this call in Pasteur that was open, and I said, well, what do I lose? I'm gonna rewrite a little bit the project and try again in Pasteur. And then in Pasteur, it worked finally. And then I got the position in Pasteur, and very soon after I got the position in Pasteur, I applied for the ERC, and I got the ERC. So suddenly I went from I'm dropping science to I have a position in one of the best institutes in France, and money just to do the project in the best possible way I could. And I can, I mean, later, if you want, I can explain why I didn't succeed on the CNRS and all these positions and why I believe I did succeed. On
Yeah. Go ahead. That sounds fascinating.
Well, to get a PI position takes many elements. It's not only about being good. It's not only about having papers. It's not only about having a good project. It's about having many elements at the same time. So if the CNRS is going to choose someone, I mean, when I was applying, there were 130 candidates for 6 positions. So how are you choosing the 6 positions? Well, you are choosing someone that has, ideally, already funding, papers, and a good place, and a good support behind. So you need many elements at the same time. So I had a good project. At some point, I also got the good paper. But I still didn't have a funding, so how can they trust that you can actually do the research that you want to do if you don't have yet the funding? You may or you may not get it, and if you don't get it, then you are there, I mean, having a salary with a good idea, but nothing, no money to do it. And also you need a good place. I mean, you need a good institute that can, in a way, guarantee that you are going to have the right conditions to develop the project. So all the three elements or four elements can be separated for the CNRS concurs. So you need to put them together by yourself. In the Pasteur, we have a unique situation in France that all of these elements are given together. You get at the same time the funding because there is a starting package, the position because they pay your salary, and the place because they give you a lab space to develop the things and all the support from the institute to develop it well. So they could take the risk on giving me a position because they could give me all the elements at once. And the CNRS was not choosing me among the 6 persons, the only 6 persons they could choose, because for them I was not really having all the elements that were needed. So that is really the explanation.
Yeah. In a way, the more innovative the project is, the more like risk the institute or the institution has to be willing to take on something like this. So
absolutely, and also it's all about the strategy. So you really need, when you want to get the position, and mostly if it's a PI position, and mostly if you know precisely in which country or which place, you need a strategy, and you need to understand which are the elements that you need, and you need to think what your strategy is going to be to put all these elements together.
Yeah. Is this your dream job?
I think yes, but there is not a single dream job. I mean, maybe some people are lucky enough to have just a single dream job. This is a dream job. It's not the dream job, because I would have made many different stuff I would have enjoyed probably. This one I enjoyed a lot, but I cannot know whether this is the only thing I would have liked equally.
Yeah, I understand. So maybe now let's go back in time for a bit, and can you tell me your biggest influence to start a science career and your biggest influence to stay in academia?
Yeah, so I would say that the way I got into science was quite random. So at the beginning of my high school, I had to choose what to study, and I knew that I wanted to study something, but it could have been anything. I mean, really, I was completely lost, and I didn't really know what meant to study science at all. I mean, the only reference I had from science was like what you can see in the movies, you know? I mean, which is far from reality. So I sort of always had an interest to understand things and to know why things are the way they are, and et cetera. And so I say, okay, well, a scientific career sounds good. And then I chose biology because I don't even remember the reasons, but probably were completely arbitrary and superficial. I like the animals, you know.
Which is a perfectly valid reason at that point.
Yeah, exactly. But I mean, it was nothing related to what actually I found later on by studying biology. You know, it was just an image that I had about what the biology was. And And then I went into the university, and when I started the university, I had the luck of having a great teacher in the first course that we have in the university, that is Introduction to Molecular Biology, Molecular Cell Biology. And this teacher happened to be not only one of the best teachers in the university and probably in universities in Argentina, but also one of the best scientists in Argentina as well. And he's very renowned. And if you ask 100 biologists the same question, they will all probably talk about this guy, because he was very, 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 very good, very influential. And he was really explaining to kids that don't know anything about what science is, what is really science about, and what is the most fascinating aspects of the science. So the history of science, how things are discovered, how were the people that made the discoveries, and how were they discovered. I mean, which to think how to make an experiment to answer a question, and to really grasp what it's like to move the knowledge forward. So these are things that are absolutely inspiring. And certainly, I mean, when I was here in these classes, really at the beginning of the university, I really say, this is what I want to do. I mean, this is something that is super cool. And then all over the years, while I was studying, probably I found that things are not necessarily as exciting as he was presenting it, but still, that kept being a north and something that was pushing me to continue studying biology and to pursue this career. And then I will say that to stay in academia after him, he played also a role, because I then came out to work in his lab. And probably when I was in his lab, kind of as a master student, I was not really interacting with him a lot, but I was immersed in the environment of the lab, in which there were all great students, great PhDs and postdocs in Argentina. And there, I mean, the whole vibe of thinking about science and discussing results and being excited about what was being discovered and stuff, etc. It was really, really exciting. And I guess later on the experience in the US. But I mean, it was getting the lucky of being involved in very exciting places where science was being done. I think that was the key. Rather than a person, it was like having the chance of being immersed in very exciting places, which was not the case for all of my colleagues. And some of my friends from the university didn't have that luck and were in boring places or in places where people were not really doing exciting things or not really excited about what they were doing. And then essentially got bored of science or disappointed and say, well, I want to do something else.
Yeah, the lab where one works, it makes a huge difference. Now, going a little bit more into like the transition between postdoc and, or in your case, I will say that your year in the unemployment, it was more like a trial for in like independence, you know, because you were already doing your own research, basically. So between mm-hmm. that time and like starting your lab, how was the adaptation to like having a lab and having to run a lab?
Yeah. It's challenging, mostly because I started the lab in the middle of the pandemic as well. So it was in September 2020. So that meant that the first year was mostly virtual. And so I had to set up everything and to make the wheel roll in the distance. So that was a little bit challenging. But well, I'm lucky that my lab is mostly in silico lab, so computational lab. So in that sense, there were many things that could be already done, even if, I mean, remotely from home. So that was very positive. But what I will say is that it really depends on the lab, on the person, and etc. So I think there are certain common points of what it's like to open the lab, but there are many others that are specific of each person. In my case, I had an idea of what I wanted to do, but there was no continuity between what I did in the postdoc or what I was doing and what I wanted to do. I mean, I had this project that I did at home on my own, and I had some other results that were kind of to be followed. There is actually one project that is still continuing in the lab and is close to be finished. But besides that, everything was to be set up from scratch. So that was one of the things about my project, and one of the things why I think Pasteur liked it is that what I was proposing to do was something new, and it was built from scratch. but also that made the project also challenging, because everything I wanted to do had to be set up from nothing. And I thought that I was coming from a lab or a postdoc lab in which they already had the tools, techniques, or know-how. No, they were not even doing going to do. I mean, all this ancient DNA stuff was not absolutely done in my previous lab. So everything was to set up. So that was challenging in terms that hiring, thinking out the projects, making setting up all the analysis pipelines, well, everything from scratch, collecting the samples, everything had to be done. So that is really challenging. I mean, making the wheel work, nobody also teach you how to do that. So you kind of learn it on the way. And it's very custom based. I mean, everybody has their own needs, so you really need to find your way. And that is what I, in my experience, and what I hear from other PIs, that is very challenging. I mean, making the wheel roll.
Yeah. Putting the energy to start, basically. It's.
Yes, exactly. I mean, it's like getting the momentum. Getting the momentum takes a lot of effort, and it's not easy, because there are a million things that you need to deal with, a million all at the same time, and you cannot possibly do the million things at the time. At the same time, so you really need to choose every time which from the million you are going to prioritize and which are the more important to the wheel to start rolling and to the momentum to start. So that is the strategy. Again, it's all about the strategy. So you really need to become and very strategic in the way you decide to put things to move.
Yeah, and also one thing is like starting with the scientific project, which more or less we are trained for during the PhD and the postdoc and blah, blah. So even if it's a different project, you have like a way of working, let's say. But it's that it's way different than when you're starting as a PI and you have to hire people. Like how you decide who to hire, how you decide who to incorporate in the lab, like what kind of expertise are you looking for, you know?
Yeah, that is certainly a key point of the whole thing, because first, I mean, you can read and even have courses of what is the best way to hire someone, or how to make the interviews. I mean, of course, these elements help, because it gives you resources that you may not have thought about. But at the end of the day, it's both a matter of luck of finding, I mean, getting the sense of out of a 1 hour of discussion or blah. And then also it's trying to get what you can also, because you're starting in lab, nobody knows you. So you are not, it's both. You need to trust the person that you are hiring, but the person you are hiring needs to trust you, because you don't have any background. You don't have anything to show, okay, well, I can trust this guy. So when a postdoc or a PhD is coming, they need to trust that you are going to lead them to get what they need to move forward in their careers. And so when you don't have any way to demonstrate that, that puts you also in a difficult situation. So it's kind of a trade-off between finding a good candidate, also that the candidate trusts that you can be a good lab to go. So you need to convince, and etc. And then you need to also think of the strategy, what's the best possible strategy. So for instance, in my case, I was contacting colleagues that work more or less in the field, trying to ask, okay, do you know people that have finished the PhD are looking for postdocs? And I was going and hunting candidates, but some of our candidates came spontaneously. So then there was all sorts of situations. I mean, some people contacted me, I also contacted some people, and sometimes I hired people through many interviews and making them interview with the other people in the lab and so on. And some other people just decided to hire them, like, okay, yes, come. After 20 minutes, you know, and because I got the feeling, okay, I think it's going to work well, or because it's fitting exactly what I need. So I need someone right now to do this, and this person knows how to do it, and it seems to be nice. So, you know, so I don't even think I have a common strategy or a guideline that I need to follow. It's kind of, it really depends on many elements and the needs I have at the time, and also the feeling that I, the gut feeling that I get.
Yeah, absolutely.
And I don't even know if this is a good strategy.
No, I mean, if it's working for you right now...
I don't know. I still don't know.
We'll see in some years, I guess.
Exactly. In a couple of years, I think.
Yeah. So going back to the mentoring and stuff, because now you have PhD students. I don't know how many you have, but for sure it's part of the master thing.
Well, actually, it's complicated, the PhD students. I can tell you later why.
I know. In France, you have to pass like a specific exam to
Yeah, that is a similar
supervise.
thing because you need to have the HDR, but to have the HDR, you need to have papers as last author with someone that you directed as first. So it's kind of a circular problem. And there are ways to overpass it, but it's not easy to hire PhD students when you are starting your team.
Yeah, which is quite different from what happens, for example, in the US, where basically the first thing that you get is PhD students, you know?
Exactly, in Argentina, a
In
little
in
bit
Chile as well.
also, yeah.
Actually, in Chile, I think postdocs are the it's
Exactly.
very
In
hard to
Argentina,
get.
the workforce in Argentina of research are only mostly PhDs. I mean, postdoc is very rare.
For us as well. So while you were doing your postdoc in Marseille, did you have a chance to mentor master students, for example, in the lab?
Yes, I only got master students and a technician, a guy that was studying as for being a technician. But I would say that I didn't really have the much of doing a lot of mentoring. So it was one master, one student, one L3 student, and one technician.
Okay, but you had a little bit of experience of mentoring because I think
Yes.
once you start like getting constantly students and stuff, like you realize how the same strategy doesn't work for everyone, you know? So for some people, you really need to be on top of them and to really like help them guide the
Closely
project.
follow,
Yes,
yes.
but other people, like they work better when they are left alone, and then you meet and discuss with them. So I was wondering if you had some experience, how is that different, or how did you apply that experience to mentoring students and postdocs now?
Yeah, I think first of all, I will say that there is a big gap between the expectations and what reality is. So, from my experience, as when I was mentoring people in my postdoc, I remember spending a lot of time with them and being, I mean, with the first, the L3, he was pretty much during the 2 months that he was in the lab, I was almost spending, I mean, half of the day with him. So I was really teaching him everything that I was doing and taking the time. For the master level student, it was more or less similar. So we are really meeting a lot, and I was investing a big part of my time, knowing that it was only for 2 months. So I said, well, and then I was also hoping that once I was becoming a PI, to really speak with them a lot, to have regular meetings every week, and to be as much as they need, to be always available when they have questions, to have time to really train them and explain them as if it was like the personal coach, how to do this better and so on. That was my expectation. And then I faced reality. You believe that as a PI, because when you are doing the postdoc, your role is to do research. So you think, okay, well, I don't have, I mean, I'm not meant to be time to spend time mentoring. So, but as a PI, since the role should be mentoring, well, when I become a PI, I will have more time to do this. And actually, it's quite the opposite. You have way less time than as a postdoc. This is what I realized. I mean, it's not that I didn't know it before because people were telling me that, but you think, well, maybe for me it's not going to be exactly like that. And it is like that. I mean, one way or another, you end up flooded of different things to do. And then sometimes I find myself having less time than I wish I have to mentor and to be with the people and to discuss with the people. So that is one part of the answer. And coming back to what you say, that everybody needs different sort of training, then yes, absolutely. I mean, I realize that I cannot really apply the same methodology with each of them. And so I guess the main role as a PI is just to have a sense of where things are moving forward as they should. And when something is not working in the way you believe they should be working, just go and try to think or rethink what else can be done just to shift the things a little bit. So it's not like a fixed thing, it's something that is being revised and revised on the flow.
Yeah, definitely. I have a couple more questions, like regarding your experience, but do you have any experience during this transition that has been like the most rewarding in terms of either science, maybe a grant, or like a particularly difficult situation that you were able to solve?
Yeah, of course there are some things that of course make you happy when you publish a paper in a big journal or when you get a big grant. So I mean, both of which happened for me in the time frame of a year. I mean, when I published first the paper in Cell and then I got the ERC grant. But I tend not to think of these things, I mean, and to give more importance than they should to these things. The goal here in science is not getting grants, and the goal of science is not publishing papers. The goal is to make great discoveries or to have ideas, and then to have goals in life or as a researcher and then achieve them. So that is for me the most rewarding. So in that terms, these things were means to an end, and my goal was to really do a very great project, something that was really exciting, something that I believe that could make a very big contribution to knowledge and to science, etc. So for me, the most rewarding, for sure, is the fact that back in 2014, I started to think about this idea. I was getting more and more excited about doing something with ancient DNA. That was something I was kind of following, but not doing really. And something with Argentina, because I really wanted to do something with my home country. And also something about with genomics and metagenomics, that was what I was actually doing. So, and then I just started to put all the pieces together and started to realize that this could be something really great. I mean, something that could have all the elements at once. I mean, doing great things, answering big questions, working with Argentina and trying to give back to Argentina part of what I was given from there in terms of the education, my formation and so on. And having this goal and then thinking how to do it and then going through all the frustration of saying no, until you finally got a yes. And then when you get the yes, it's a yes to do it in the best possible way. So that is what makes me happier than anything, is the fact that I am doing exactly what I wanted to do, not shaped or reshaped to be satisfying someone else. Is I do it in the way I want, in the best, and I think we can really do great stuff. I mean, of course, we haven't achieved nothing so far, because it's only been 2 years, but I believe that the kind of things that we are doing are gonna be great, and I'm super excited about it. And that is certainly the most rewarding things. The fact that I feel like I am spending my time and energy in something that is exciting and that can be actually great.
Wow, I love that answer. I love the fact that you think that the papers and the grants are not really the goal of science. So that's pretty nice.
That is rather a pain of the science.
Yeah.
Having to publish in the way we need to publish, or having to get grants in the way we need to get grants, is kind of a necessary pain that we need to go through, but it cannot be ever the goal.
Yeah, I absolutely love that stand. So talking about papers, do you have any particular paper or preprint that you would like to highlight?
Yeah. Not really. I mean, not really. I'll explain why. And particular things of our time that I believe is that science has somehow become a little bit incremental in a way that, even though there are great papers that, I mean, we read them and we get excited about what they discover, if you make a step away and think about it, they are still kind of adding something more on something that we sort of expected in a way. And very often this is the case. But what I really like is the fact, I mean, now I'm talking more into the field that in which I am, that it's ancient DNA and paleogenomics and even high throughput sequencing and genomics. If you think about it, this field has only 10 years or 12 years, 15 years at most. So this first decade, besides all the discoveries that were made, were all the setup of new tools and new ways and new resources. And now what I feel exciting about the times that we are living now is that now that the proof of concept have been done, that the surface has been scratched, now we are getting into the thing. Now we are getting into integrating different layers of information, integrating stuff. I mean, in the case of ancient DNA, human ancient DNA data with microbial ancient DNA data, with sediments ancient DNA data, with archaeology, with many different disciplines coming together, history, paleoclimate, well, everything in the soup, and then we are really starting to answer big questions or trying to tackle big questions, because the only way we can do that and we can have this leap in knowledge is to just put many things together and trying to learn from each other and try to see how different disciplines can convey into this. And so what I find exciting about the research nowadays is how these things start to pop up, and we start to have the more and more science that is integrative, and all together by this synergy that can be built by different disciplines and by different layers of information, we can go and learn something that none of the disciplines alone could actually answer.
That's really fascinating, because I feel like in many fields there is more of a reductionistic approach to doing science, and you get like into the cell and then the protein and then the molecule.
Yeah,
and
very specialized, and that is necessary.
Yes,
it's necessary to have people that is highly specialized in something. But also, I think it's good that when these people are very special in something, plus the other one that is specialized in something, blah blah blah, they learn to speak to each other and to get information from the other, just to grasp or to tackle a bigger question. Yeah. So I always like this thing of the big questions, but I appreciate and I think it's essential that some people are more focused on questions at the smaller scale. But I am passionate and I get really excited about the big questions and how people are trying to bring things together just to have some sort of glimpse of the answer to these big questions.
Mm. Yeah, it's amazing. So I would like to finish by asking you if there are any things that you would have loved to know beforehand, or if you have any tips for future PIs listening to the show.
Yes. So what I would say is that, first of all, that there is not an easy path. And of course, we may hear of stories of people that for whom it has been relatively easy, like one thing after the other and one blah, and essentially, but most of the cases it's not easy. And really, I think that if you really want to build an exciting path, you really need to be ready to take some risk in a way, and to also to try to don't try to mimic the path of someone else's, but to try to build your own path. And this is essential, because we may take our favorite scientist and study exactly how he did everything, and how he thinks, and how he tackles the problems, and etc. And we try to redo, or somehow mimic, a variation of all that, and we are going to fail in most cases. Or we may succeed, but then we are going to be probably unhappy, because at the end we are going to be just being the shadow of someone else's. So if you really want to be a joyful PI and enjoy what you are doing, I believe that it's worth spending time in thinking how to build your own path, how to be in your own way, your own road, in adapted and in shape to your needs, your interest, your what would really excite you. And you need to think or picture yourself of where I would like to be, what I would like to be doing, and then thinking what's the best strategy to get there. But you really need to create your own road, your own path.
Yeah, I also think that it has more to do with like the vision than fitting into a specific evaluation panel.
Yeah, exactly. So it's about your vision or where you want to be, and then how do I strategically adapt that to the requirements of whatever place I want to go, I mean, or will evaluate me. So of course there is always some sort of, you need to fit somehow to a goal, but you really need to have a clear idea of what you want to do. I mean, what you like to develop, and what's in which topic or research you want to invest your time and energy, because you are going to invest an insane amount of energy and time. So you better think where you want to put that energy and time.
Yeah, for sure. Well, now I will give you a minute to think if you have something that you would like to plug. I don't know, open positions, any interesting projects that are coming, or another dream project that you would like to develop if the right person comes along. So I don't know, do you have anything that you would like to promote, basically?
I don't think I have something in mind in that sense now, because we are now at the lab, we are at the stage that we are still getting the momentum. We are getting the more and more momentum, but for us now it's all about starting to get publications, starting to all the different projects that we started, that are many, fortunately, many parallel projects, they really consolidate and they start creating neat results. So all the energy and focus is put there. So we already have the team, process has been done, and now it's about getting all the, consolidating all the projects. So we are there at the moment. But hopefully, I mean, from here 2 years, let's say, we're going to have the first publication, and then it's about to think what's next. But we are not really focused on the now.
That's nice. Maybe in the future, if you publish first a preprint, then we might interview you for the main show.
I will be really happy to.
Yeah. And with that, I would like to thank you, actually, Nico, for taking the time to talk with me, for telling me about your experience. So I'm really, really happy. And all the best of luck for the next years to come.
Thank you very much.
And hopefully soon we hear that you're a full unit at Pasteur.
I hope so. I mean, we still have 3 years ahead, but yes, I hope so.
Yeah.
I would like to also thank you for giving me the opportunity to tell a little bit of my story. And I hope that anyone listening, I mean, what I just said is useful anyhow. And if not, at least you don't feel like you have lost some time of your life listening to this guy. Thanks.
Welcome. Thank you so much.
And that's the show, folks. If you enjoyed listening, then hit that subscribe button to get the latest updates straight to wherever it is you're listening. Don't forget to rate us on Spotify or Apple and follow us on Twitter at MotionPod. You can find links to things we've just discussed on our website, preprintsinmotion.com. If you'd like to tell us what you think, then send an email, shout at us on Twitter, or shout at us if you see us walking down the street. This has been a JMJ production, generously supported by our friends at ASAP Bio. Until next time, have a good week.